This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, a hub for homebrewers since 1978. Visit homebrewersassociation.org for award-winning recipes, brewing tips, and community. homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Chris Nogi of Dark Hills Gluten-Free Brewery joins us to talk about the tasty gluten-free beers he and his wife and brewing partner Lee Nogi are brewing in southern Missouri. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And we are grateful for you if you do that. Steve Wilkes and I finally had time to get together to shoot a couple of episodes of Basic Brewing Video and an experiment for Basic Brewing Radio. We sampled my pale ale, dry hopped with Amarillo Cryo hops, which turned out darn tasty, if I say so myself. That video is already out there to financial supporters of the show, along with the recipe and a behind-the-scenes video for upper-tier supporters. We also shot an experiment that Steve did comparing the effects of two different yeasts on a tasty smoked pale ale, a Belgian yeast and a pale ale yeast. So you have to tune in later to see if I could tell those apart. The audio episode we recorded was on my experiment tasting the effect of different hop stand lengths on the hop sampler recipe. Three different small batches, one with hops pitched right at flame out and immediately chilled, the next with a 10-minute hop stand, and the third with a 30-minute hop stand. All used Cascade hops and the standard hop sampler recipe. I don't want to spoil it, but the results were very interesting, so I plan on posting that show next week. And since both of us were sick at one time or another leading into 2020, I think we're only going to have time to post one show in January. So, as a thank you to financial supporters, I posted a special bonus cooking video showing one of my favorite Instant Pot recipes, shredded chicken tacos with salsa verde. Mmm! We love that stuff around here. I know you got an Instant Pot for Christmas, didn't you? And and you're saying, what the heck do I do with this thing? Well, this is a simple, quick, and delicious recipe to try. So check out that at patreon.com/basicbrewing. I posted a video and the recipe to financial supporters, all financial supporters this time. And let me know what you think of just releasing, you know, only cooking bonus material. Is that fun? Casey from our sponsor, Imperial Organic Yeast, says there is a new seasonal. Now available until the end of February, it's L09 Que Bueno. Que Bueno creates refreshing light to dark lagers with very clean, low ester aromatic profiles and nice crisp and dry finishes. Casey says this strain is not just a great choice for Mexican lagers, but for any lager where clean ester profile and dry finish is appropriate. She says Que Bueno is excellent for brewing Mexican lagers, Vienna lagers, Maibocks, and more. And, you know, this is lagering season up here in the Northern Hemisphere, you know. We love Imperial Organic Yeast. As I say, my stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore for 5-gallon batches of moderate gravity beers. Imperial has the highest pitch rate, 200 billion cells. And Imperial Yeast has a recommended shelf life now of 4 months. So look for L09 Que Bueno at your local homebrew shop, Imperial Organic Yeast. And I've already brewed my first beer with Que Bueno. Casey sent me 2 packs of it. I decided on a dark Maibock, or at least my interpretation of it. I used 10 pounds, or 4.5 kilograms of Vienna malt, and 1 pound, or 450 grams of dark Munich. And that's it for the grain bill. I'm really into simple grain bills nowadays, as you could tell. I hopped it with 1 ounce, or 28 grams of Hallertau Tradition at the beginning of the 60-minute boil. And at the end of the boil, since I was just using such a simple hop strategy, I just racked it into a no-chill container and let it chill overnight. And the next morning, when I pitched the when it had cooled down, I pitched the Que Bueno and set it down in the basement where it's in the upper 50s Fahrenheit. That's around 14 C. And boy, the day after pitching, the beer was very happy. So I'm looking forward to tasting that. And the airlock smelled great. Nice and malty. Hey, good news. Great news, actually, for Basic Brewing Radio listeners. Listen up. This is a great chance for you to save some bucks. Our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa, are running a special in January just for Basic Brewing Radio listeners. 20% off beer and wine kits all this month. Just use the code BB20N20JAN on highgravitybrew.com when you shop for beer and wine kits, and you'll save 20%. That's a great deal. Some of the featured beer kits on highgravitybrew.com this month are Catherine the Second Russian Imperial Stout, Boggy Bottom Barley Wine, and Northern Lights Winter Ale. Now, those are high gravity beers, so 20% off those can save you a bunch. And if you make wine kits, you know, making your wine, your own wine, is easy, especially compared to beer. It's kind of like making Kool-Aid and pitching yeast in. It's a little more complicated than that, but and making your own wine is less expensive than buying commercial wines, and they are good. But now with this special, it's even 20% less expensive. So you just have to remember the code. So get a pen, BB20N20JAN. That's BB20IN20JAN. HighGravityBrew.com is the place for electric brewing systems and tons of great beer and wine kits along with everything else you need. BB20N20JAN at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com during January for 20% off beer and wine kits. That is quite the deal. Okay, way back in 2007, I interviewed Lee Nogi at Dark Hills when they were in the planning stages of a large-scale gluten-free brewery. Well, you may remember what happened in the financial sector of 2008, so that large brewery didn't happen. However, Lee and her husband Chris are successfully brewing on a smaller scale as Dark Hills, on the premises of Whistling Springs Brewing in southern Missouri, just over the state line from us. So I get an email from Chris inviting me up to sample and talk. And my original intention was to do a twofer and talk about both breweries in the same show. But as you'll hear, we spent so much time talking about Dark Hills and gluten-free that I decided to do a second part dedicated to Whistling Springs. So here's part one. Well, Chris Nogi, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have you here.
Where are we at?
We're at Whistling Springs Brewing Company and Dark Hills Brewery, a little farmhouse brewery and tap room about a mile and a half north of the Arkansas border out of Pea Ridge. Little place that's been around for about 3 years now, and my wife Lee and I have been brewing here for two. Started out as kind of an expanded hobby and has turned into being kind of the secret gem of the area, a destination for lots of people with decent events and really grown into something. It's neat to have been part of this so far.
Now, we met Lee way back in 2007, I think. I looked it up in the archives. And at that point, there were ambitious plans to build, a big production gluten-free brewery.
Correct.
It's on a smaller scale now, but successful in that, y'all have won awards for your gluten-free beers, and you're producing them and selling them, right alongside the regular beers here.
We are. the earlier attempt just happened to coincide very closely with the economic collapse at that point in time, and a lot of investors decided they wanted to keep their money somewhere else.
So in their mattresses.
Exactly. So we ended up having to scale back on plans for the original Dark Hills Brewery. Now, I will say that that's my wife's operation, and I kind of like it that way. I don't get veto power in anything, which means it's easier for me to keep my mouth shut, and that makes everything happier. But she does still have me around as the brewery engineer and assistant brewer, because we've been working on this stuff for a very long time. And out here, we've been able to, even though it's working smaller, we've been able to work smaller with a good plan. We don't have any investors. Everything we have here we're paying for with the profits of whatever it is that we're making. So at each point at the end of a day, it's all ours. And any growth, we get to plan. We don't have people breathing down our necks. And that's on both sides. It really is kind of a very relaxed way to do something that neither one of us has done before. We've never started a major brewery. So we get to do this and see how things work and learn along the way.
Well, in this environment, you're hearing stories of, we just lost a Boulder Beer Company, apparently, and other breweries that have been successful and grown really big have been acquired by their entities. And so it's kind of an evolving time to be in the craft beer world, and it seems like being small and sustainable nowadays is attractive.
I think it is. There's room for growth here in as far as getting distribution, especially throughout some of the major places in Missouri. The Whistling Springs side, the traditional gluten-bearing beer side, it doesn't provide any surprises. We can provide a lot of local retailers, restaurants, get contracts within the county, within McDonald County here, and really kind of make a sustainable and reasonably profitable business. But on the gluten-free side, it's always been the fact that we have to go much bigger because the group of people who are dedicated to gluten-free beers is much smaller in any geographical area. So to find 100,000 customers, you can do that in Fayetteville, or for gluten-free, it can do that in all of Arkansas or all of Missouri. So the challenge on that side is to find a way to get out into the state rather than out into the county. So we've got kind of two business ideas working, and they both have to mesh, which is one of the reasons why we've decided to go with distribution on our own, because we can get to places and make contracts for both sides of the operation, and we can make fulfillable and sustainable contracts as far away as St. Louis, if we want to get that far, with one style of beer, and we can stay local with the other. Depending on what growth is, we have the ability to kind of control where it goes.
So we've got nine samples in front of me, and they're little thimble-sized samples. we believe in being responsible here.
A lot of folks who come in here, it's their first trip in, and they look at a wall with 19 alcoholic and one non-alcoholic tap, and they're starting to think, what do I like? And I can't tell them. I can brew a variety and range of beers and hope I find one that they will, but I can't tell them what they do. So these are the cups that we give folks to help them make their decision as to what they want a pint of.
So we've got a line of four from Dark Hills, from the gluten side, and four from Whistling Springs. I keep wanting to say Whispering Springs, but that's not it.
I actually worked here for about 3 months before I got that right.
That's a branding issue.
It is.
Whistling Springs. So which side should we start with?
Well, it depends on if you want to start with the darkest or the lightest beer first. And probably lightest beer is the easiest because then, it works downhill in the palate.
Sure.
Okay, so the very first beer you're going to have there is Loki's Lemon Ale. Now, this is our kind of our Radler, our citrus bicycle beer. Mm-hmm. A traditional Radler has beer and some carbonated thing like a Sprite or a grapefruit soda or that, and it's a light lager. We actually put the fruit in fermentation, so it is fermented to be this. Mm. And it's an orange lemon. It's our lawnmower beer. It's the second beer that we designed. It's been around just a couple months shy of the first one. And the first one, while it was an okay beer, it was our first venture into gluten-free brewing, and it was done for the wedding that, if you go back in the archives and find Lee's interview, you'll hear that story. But Lee and Connie's wedding that Lee and I brewed some beer for, and that was where we learned what not to do and what paths to start taking to make better beers. Then we worked on this one, on the Radler, and it's been through about 5 recipe changes, but now it's kind of locked, and it's our signature beer here on the Dark Hills side.
It's very nice. It's very refreshing and very citrusy, and it's got a more substantial body than I thought it would. You know, I was thinking lemonade, you know, but it's not a lemonade-y drink. It's not a 7-Up experience.
We're not trying to be Mike's Hard Lemonade or anything like that. This is actually a lemon ale with some orange in it. Lemon tends to be too bright by itself and kind of one-dimensional. But add a little bit of, say, some blood orange or one of the Sevilles, one of the really juicy oranges to it. And you cut that brightness by a little bit. You add the refreshment. But it still doesn't make it one of the flavored soda pops, like a Seagram's Wine Cooler or things like that. There aren't too many beers that match this thing as far as a category goes. It's really unique to us.
Now, we've got gluten-free brewers out there listening. Mm-hmm. And I know that y'all are fairly protective of your secrets and of
yes.
your... But what can you tell us what can you tell the gluten-free brewers out there? What are some hints that you can give? What, you know, can you talk about
sure.
the base malt and the...
I can. There are many, many more gluten-free grains out there than most people would realize. One of the early things that my wife and I did was study medieval monastic brewing technologies. So when we did that, I built a plaster malt floor and the cisterns and the drying mats over a wood-fired kiln and various other things. We learned how to malt regular grains when we started. And so when we first came on board with the gluten-free stuff, Red Bridge, Bard's, they're sorghum beers and they're sorghum syrup beers. And we didn't like the taste of sorghum beers, but we did have the technology to malt grains. So we started working with things like buckwheat and quinoa and some of the mystic grains that are rice cousins. There are so many grains out there that are gluten-free. None of them have the husks and things that you would actually find helpful in brewing. You have to find ways around the size of the grains and some of the technical problems. But for flavors, learning to malt, even in small scale, your own grains, and it's pretty simple. I mean, we learned everything we needed to learn off the internet for malting, and it doesn't take a long time. And a converted Ronco Showtime rotisserie with a big hominy can that had a door cut in it and a couple of tumbler bars for our roaster to get color and things, and putting pans of water into control. It took a little bit of a learning curve to learn that. But the biggest thing I can tell folks is don't be stuck with molasses and sorghum syrup as your base. There are so many other grains out there to use. We're finding a lot of success with buckwheat for our lighter beers, and we can go all kinds of roasts with it and all kinds of treatments, Munichs and Viennas and all sorts of things. But don't be afraid of using, and yes, now you can source some pre-malted grains other than sorghum and millet. And I mean, there's sunflower seeds that have been deshelled. Mm-hmm. All kinds of seeds can still provide sugar as a base. Don't be afraid to try them. It's a process of learning what goes together. And really, for gluten-free, it's a process of covering up the tastes that don't belong in beer with a taste that does. Hmm. So you start out with a base, and then you say, that has some things that I don't like. And then you put more things in it to cover those up. And each time you do, the footprint of it's not beer gets smaller and smaller and smaller until you get to an acceptable level.
So do you malt all of your malts that you use on the gluten-free side?
We still malt a few. We have a couple of folks out in Colorado that are commercial malt houses now that can provide us with a lot of the grains that we want to use. Not all of them. So that's when we turn around and malt our own. Just having the ability to do so gives us, a couple of gold medals, actually.
Wow. Now, can you talk about the base malt in this one?
That one is a little bit of buckwheat and some rice.
Huh.
And we actually did start out with some corn, but we have a proprietary blend of organics stuff. You can get it out of most people's gardens in Arkansas that add what we need for body enhancement, mouthfeel, head retention. The things that are naturally in wheat, barley, and rye, but aren't in any of these other grains. Mm. And we found that we didn't need the corn. So we went back and increased rice, buckwheat, putting in an actual malt. We used some rice solids, some rice syrups, some malted rice, but putting in an actual malt of something other than rice gives it what you said, a little bit of a more beery character than Mike's Hard Lemonade.
I'm gonna stick with the gluten free side. What
okay,
do we got
this
here?
This is it's called Schleppner's, and it's a maple sweet porter. When Battle Martin was with the TTB on labeling, he said we couldn't use words like kick on our label, and we couldn't use any kind of things. But then he went ahead and approved Texas Sucks beer, and then we had a little lever to go out and say, well, you might think so, but this is called Schleppner's Kick, and Schleppner was the Norse god Odin's eight-legged horse. So if you're going to get kicked by a horse, it might as well be an eight-legged one. Mm. Get the job done effectively, one might say. Most of the beverages from the Dark Hillside are Viking-named, and our whole labeling approach is Viking-themed because the northern Germanic blonde-haired, blue-eyed folks are the most susceptible, the most common celiac.
Huh.
Sufferers. So it's kind of, this is the folks that we're dealing with. The lighter your skin, the lighter your eyes, the more likely that you're going to have gluten problems.
Now, this is fairly light in body, very drinkable. It's got I wouldn't say maple necessarily if I were to drink it blind, but it does taste like a porter. So I'm just wondering, and it's a darker beer.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously weren't going for a maple flavored beer, a maple tasting beer. But does the maple add the porteriness in the beer
the
that you want?
The maple tends to bridge the gap between a sort of overwhelming buckwheat, roasted buckwheat taste, and the rest of the beer. Ah. So the maple is that bridge. We don't want it to be, we don't want it to be maple forward, but it does kind of meld everything together and create, it's one of those things that Lee is incredible at. She figures out what needs to be added to something to, not just to enhance one part of it, but to tone down another part. Because without the maple, it is a very buckwheaty porter. Huh. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is very buckwheat forward. Huh. And this porter, we want it to be, like I said, it's a breakfast porter is what we like to call it. We want it to be just kind of easy to drink and a entryway darker beer into gluten-free.
Yeah, it's not super roasty, but again, it like I say, it does have that kind of that porter character in there, and I guess adding the maple to the, it's kind of like adding vanilla to milk chocolate.
Yes.
To make it taste more like chocolate. You wouldn't think that you'd have to add vanilla to make something to taste more chocolatey, but
and
that's the way it works.
You wouldn't think you'd have to put salt in something to make it sweeter, or you know. But as a culinary person. And I've got a little background in that. It's not formal, but I learned that it's really surprising sometimes what you put in something to make it taste the exact opposite. The next little sample that you've got there is the gluten-free Märzen. Huh. We brewed, this is one of the two beers that we have duplicates of. We have a traditional and a gluten-free. They're very close to each other. But we wanted to have an Oktoberfest beer for Oktoberfest celebration for those people who were gluten-free. Because if you can't have an Oktoberfest beer at an Oktoberfest, you know, you're kind of missing the point.
Yeah.
So we brewed the Märzen with glutinous and non-gluten ingredients. And it is the lager we have on tap on both sides.
So this one I'm tasting... This is the gluten-free one,
That's
right?
The gluten-free. Okay. If you would like, I can real quick pour you one of the traditional, and you can kind of compare it.
Okay. Yeah.
It'll only take me. Just
and I'll talk about this beer while you're over there behind the scenes. This is like the golf reporter speaking along the side of the green here. This is a kind of a deep copper color. It's nice and clean. It's got a more substantial body than the previous one, I would say. And it's got a Martin or a Märzen Oktoberfest character to it. So what goes into this beer?
Honestly, that one's one I can't remember off the top of my head. I do know that both of them are Tet and Hallertau hops. We use the same hop profile on both of them. We used the same original gravity on both of them. We just brewed them with different grain styles. I wish I could answer that question for you. It has been, like I said, since about July or August since I did that one. And it is a one-time-a-year brew, so it's not one that I have committed up here like the repeats that we regularly do.
Well, with 20 beverages on tap, you can be forgiven for forgetting details. I'm sipping the hybrid here now.
Well, that's actually the full gluten.
Oh, okay. And it is sort of more luxurious, I would say.
Yes.
It does have a stronger mouthfeel. The head retention is more, but you can tell they're from the same kind of family, though.
There is no real way to make an exact duplicate, and I'm actually lying right there because we've done it. There's no real way to make an exact duplicate of most beer styles within or to go to gluten free. Even if you get the roasting color and the techniques of creating, you know, crisp or caramel within the grains you're using, you're going to end up with something different. But the key is, and I've got to give credit again where the brewmistress comes in. She does an extraordinary job of being able to match quantities and types of grains that I would have never thought of. It seems to be just a natural talent of hers, and I wouldn't trade that for the world where we're at right now.
Well, both are delicious.
Well, thank you.
So with gluten-free brewing, you have the challenge of no husk, and so, you know, with lautering and mashing and things like that, it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. On the homebrew side, you know, especially since y'all have started, brew in a bag has come about,
yes,
you know, on that scale, to where you don't really necessarily have to have a well set mash tun.
Absolutely. Brew in a bag, or what we had tried in previous incarnations of our system, we now brew in something, on the gluten-free side, in something that most homebrewers would not recognize. I've changed the technology of how we get a beer out of these grains in a real big way. It's still all the same practical application. Rests at temperature, recirculations, spargings, but it's done in a way that goes kind of far out from traditional.
What scale do you brew at? How big is your system?
We're brewing at about a barrel system right now, but there's no real scalability issues with what we've got. And we'll go to a barrel and a half when we move up in the glutinous. We'll actually, because of the local population, we're still going to be under the constraints that we're under now, which is to brew only enough to keep it fresh on the shelves until people buy it.
Since you're not distributing it.
Well, even when we start distributing, we're only going to be distributing locally to start with. And because our local gluten-free population is lower, we can still brew smaller batches of the gluten-free on top of the regular size batches of the glutinous beers. The brew-in-a-bag system is really incredible. One thing I'll tell you, please don't make flour out of your tiny little grains. It's very hard on any kind of modern malt mill to crush quinoa because it just goes right through even at the smallest settings. Find a way, but don't turn it to flour. There's nothing good about that in any way, and we've had many experiences with that happening. We've had to learn how fragile some of these gluten-free grains are, especially if after they've been kilned but not crystallized, or that they tend to want to turn to flour on their own.
Well, what's a disadvantage? Why not turn it to flour?
Well, there is no... First of all, we don't filter. All of our clarifying is done either with Irish moss in the boil or cold crashing the beers. And if you get all that stuff, it doesn't matter how much you've boiled or that, a lot of it's coming across. And the spent protein residue in many of these gluten-free beers is really not beery. It does affect the base taste of the beer you want. If it's out of there, the beer is clean, enjoyable. If it's still in there, so just don't. You don't want that stuff suspended in your finished product. You can brewed the perfect beer, and it still will have those off tastes because of what's suspended in it. And you don't want to have to filter that, so just don't put it in there in the first place. It's like gluten. Don't let it get in your beer when you start, and then you don't have to remove it.
Yeah, this is the last one.
And
here,
this is a cider. It's a blood orange tangerine. We tend to do three types of ciders. One we call our Jolly Rancher treatment. And the blood orange tangerine is one of our Jolly Rancher treatment. We brighten it up a little bit. There's a little citric acid added in it to... that's what they do to Jolly Ranchers to give you that kind of pop, especially things like the green apple. We also have a very kind of subdued natural fruit ciders like raspberry, blackberry, elderberry. We do a lot with that. Then we have our oddball ciders, our spiced ciders, which all of these get pasteurized before, if we haven't fermented secondary with the fruit, they all get pasteurized before we add fruit or honey or one of the additions. And they're all a malted grain base. because our ciders have a heavier mouthfeel. They're a little more satisfying than the watery stuff that you pour out of like a woodchuck bottle. Mm-hmm. There's something to them that sticks with you a little bit. We really appreciate doing that. We work with the second runnings of several of our grains from our lighter beers. You'll hear in a bit how I learned about cleaning and ranching yeasts. And so I've turned around and taken some of that, and we use it on the other side too. But we also add some malts to make it a draft cider, something that's got a little more, little more stick to your ribs to it.
Yeah, it's got a lot. It's got more, more body to it than a traditional cider would. And by pasteurizing, and then essentially, if you're adding the fruit afterwards, you're back sweetening essentially.
Correct. Some of our, especially some of our more delicate fruit flavors, they don't last well through a full fermentation. But we also don't want to kick off another fermentation in the cider because we don't cask condition our ciders. We force carbonate. So we don't sulfite. We don't filter out. We don't centrifuge. We just pasteurize in a closed loop. And then crash it out again, and then add our fruit, and that way you have the entire fruit experience in the cider.
So if you've got a home system, a traditional home system, what are some tips if we want to do home pasteurization, you know, as far as temperature and time and all that?
65 minutes measured in the material, or 65 degrees measured in the material for at least 20 minutes. So if you have a carboy...
So 65 Celsius?
65 Celsius.
Okay.
Yes. 65 Celsius or 65 to 70. And in a water bath, essentially, but make sure that your product is at that temperature for 20 minutes. And then that should take care of most of what you've got. It'll eliminate most of your problems if you're bottling, or if you're working in larger containers that you could be popping caps or exploding things. It'll help.
So you could essentially do a sous vide system and do something like that.
Absolutely.
Or if you have a big electric system like I have, you could set the system for that temperature. And
exactly. And one of the uses of a Herm system is that the mash tun has no direct heat on it, so you can control control a water bath or any kind of item in there to a certain temperature.
So 65 Celsius at how long?
About 20 minutes.
Okay.
You know, these are not trade secrets. You can just look up.
There are charts out there.
Yeah, there's lots of them, and I tend to follow charts. I call myself Brew Monkey number one here. Technically, I can take any piece of paper you give me and turn it into something to drink. I don't invent what's on the piece of paper very well, but I can make it. And a lot of that comes from just, okay, there's a thing I have to do here. And then I go out and research, and I get as many people's papers and that. And I look and see what's been proven scientifically, and then we just run with that. And 90% of the time, it tends to work.
So now we've talked. I'm tempted. We've got we've sampled the Dark Hills wares, mm-hmm. and I'm tempted to kind of turn this into a two-parter, say goodbye for now and turn off the mic and then turn it back on, and we're on the next week or something, and talk about the Whistling Springs side. How do you feel about that, Chris?
I would be very much appreciative of being able to spend this much time again on the ones that I'm responsible for.
Because I feel like, I'm glad that we've spent so much time on the Dark Hills side, because these are delicious beers, and we've got, gluten-free brewers out there. So, let's spend a couple more minutes, because I was kind of like worried that we were going to spend 5 minutes on the other side. So talk about I mean, you've had to sort of develop a lot of the technology, a lot of the recipes, a lot of that stuff on your own.
Absolutely.
But where do you go? What's your inspiration out there for other? Are you plugged in with other groups or other people out there?
We have several commercial breweries that are either making a gluten-free product or are completely gluten-free, like New Era Fine Fermentations in Tulsa, Holidaily in Colorado. In fact, they were just down here this weekend to visit and to come in here and kind of talk. And we're working on, hopefully, with some of our gluten-free partners, working on some collaborative efforts to make use of local materials from where they are and local materials from where we are. One of the things about both sides of our brewery here, we grow hops, we ranch yeast, we get local fruits from places. We have our own bees, so our honey brown has its own, I mean, that's our honey. We have a lot of things that we try to do as close to home as possible. And we appreciate all this local input. People will come in and say, hey, do you need persimmons? And it's like, yes. We need persimmons. And so we go down into Rogers and get persimmons. And, you know, but it's all sourced from our local community, as much of it as we can get. And if it can't be grown on the farm, we'll find somebody around who does it. And it's really kind of a really interesting and neat part of working with something on this scale and actually out here in the middle of nowhere, that we get to involve the folks who sit on the other side of the bar in a lot of the things that they're drinking. Because a lot of our customers are the ones who bring us stuff to work with. And that's the big benefit, I think, of staying local. Not just that you're supporting somebody local financially, but they're involved with your process. And so some of the folks we're trying to work with are in places far enough away where they've got native, you know, plants and native materials that we can use that we can't get here, but that they know, you know, that's their neighbors and folks. And we're really interested in working with that and seeing what kind of new stuff we can come up with. I did mention earlier that I lied about not being able to make an exact copy of a beer. 2018's U.S. gold medal is the lie. Well, it's Plundered Abbey Belgian Triple, or Trappel, excuse me.
I say triple.
I look at folks and say, what does Trappel mean in Belgian? They say triple. That was our feedback from judges and everything else. Say you've pretty much hit the Carmelite formula on the nose. It was an extraordinary beer. It's not on tap now, and we're getting it ready to come back on the tap. But an extraordinary beer that was absolutely indistinguishable. Not aftertaste, not 20 minutes later, nothing could tell you that you didn't just drink a high-end Trappel.
I say triple.
Yeah.
Can I be greedy? You know, since we were
sure.
Can I try the Goza?
The Goza is not a gluten free.
Oh darn!
Yeah.
Well, what have I not, have I tried? Is there something up there I haven't tried?
Yes, there is one. We have another cider, but that's you have not tried this. This.
Now, wait till you get closer to the mic here, Chris, before you say.
This is our
Iceland's. Now that one's got a nice head on it, that one.
This one's our Iceland Shandy, and there are four flavors of it. This is our Winter Shandy, which is a cranberry black walnut.
And the nose on that is a lot of fun.
The Spring Shandy is a blueberry almond. The Summer is a peach pecan, and the Fall is a English walnut apricot.
Oh, wow. That's like a little tart. It's like a little piece of pie.
You got cranberry, you got black walnut, and you've got a very, very light ale base. Because we really did just want the flavors to come through. We don't really want to have anything behind them. We want to be serving you a little piece of pie in a glass, you know. And I don't know if there's such a thing as a cranberry black walnut pie, but there might have to be.
There should be. But it's got a nice mouthfeel to it. You know, it's substantial, and so and it's got a bit of crust, you know, to go with the fruit as well. So what? Buckwheat.
Yes. There are, when we're trying to build something that has a kind of an underlying graham, or, you know, there are biscuit malts, and the closest you can come to a biscuit malt, something that's a little bready, a little shortbready kind of thing, is just malted buckwheat, not treated in any way, shape, or form, but just malted buckwheat. If you've had straight buckwheat pancakes, you can see where that's moving in kind of close to a pie crusty kind of a thing. And that's where buckwheat as a flavor really shines. If you want something biscuity or bready or cookie-like, you know, English cookie-like, not American sugar cookie, but... Mm-hmm. If you want that, then you know, these are three of the things that I've learned. If you put too much quinoa into something, it tastes like prednisone, like something you give your kids for a bad strep thing. It's very medicinal and kind of yuck. If you put too much sorghum in something, it tends to end up like what you take out of the bottom of a garbage disposal. Yeah, it's really like old vegetation, and it gets worse with age. And buckwheat can give you like a victory malt kind of thing going on in your beer. I'm trying to pick up as much of the basic pairings of things as I can, but it's just not intuitive. It's just something you have to have a talent at, I guess.
Experience.
Yes.
Brew.
Exactly. And keep experimenting with it. We involve our customers here. We ask them for suggestions, where they've been, what beers they've really enjoyed. Because no matter how creative you think you want to be, you're kind of locked into your own pattern. Mm-hmm. And it takes other people to bring you out of it.
Well, excellent. Well, let's say goodbye for now, and
right.
we'll shut down the mic, and then we'll come back, and we'll right. talk the other side of the brain. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Chris and to Lee in absentia. Now, to break things up, I'm going to run my hop stand length experiment next week, and then return to Whistling Springs after that. It was a very fun chat, too, and the location is really cool. It's on a farm, and it's kind of remote, but, you know, Waze got me there, and I was greeted by a pig or two running around the yard, which I'll post a picture of at some point on Instagrams and such. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at PaceyBrewingShop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at Patreon.com/PaceyBrewing. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Pacey Brewing Radio and our website is brought by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.